I don't wanna be the boy that runs in the back. I don't wanna be the kid that falls in the dark. All I really want to be is the guy that gets that girl.
Welcome to the AJ Steele Show. We discuss politics, sex, money, and everything in between. And now, here's your host, an immigrant, a self-made millionaire, an American, AJ Steele. Everything I say and do, I'm just
not good enough for you. I don't want to be the boy. Welcome to another fantastic episode of the AJ Steele Show. This is the second installment of our American Rebels series. Today we will feature an interview with a Harley rider from New Jersey. His name is Ram Lubranicki, and he sure fits the bill. Yes, he wears the leathers. Yes, he is tough and gruff. And yes, he doesn't take any crap from anyone. But Ram does a lot more than fit the mold the media and Hollywood created for him. He actually lives, breathes, and fights for the right to protect the live free or die paradigm. The same American credo we all understand and hold dear to our hearts. I first heard of Ram a few years back when he and a large group of patriotic American writers called American Bikers for National Security decided to fight back against a type of radical Islam that has infiltrated many of our American institutions. Islam that is personified by the New America hating Congress members like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. Islam that uses our American values of tolerance and kindness as a springboard or the fuel that enables it to grow exponentially to eventually destroy the host country from within, a lot like a malignant form of cancer. Ram has dedicated his life to educating Americans about the danger of unchecked Muslim immigration to the USA and the eventual plan of radicalized Muslims to use our very own systems to destroy our freedom. For their efforts, Ram and his group of patriots were called a hate group by the SPLC, also known as the Southern Poverty Law Center, which in my opinion are nothing but a bunch of greedy political crooks. He's also been called a racist, an Islamophobe, and even a Nazi by mainstream American and international media. He has been arrested and sued for standing up to the enemies of our country. So who is this horrible, terrible Nazi? Would you believe it? This Nazi is the Jewish son of Holocaust survivors, a man whose family also suffered at the hand of Muslim terrorists. He is an immigrant who grew up in America and who has grown to appreciate and love our country with all of his heart. But before we get to Ram, we're going to go to break. And before that, I'd like to remind all of you to spread the word about the AJ Steele Show by subscribing and sharing our podcast with your friends, and even your enemies for that matter. Our show is continuing its record-setting growth with each new episode, and we hope to continue our rise in the charts. We also hope to make a difference in the discourse in our country. This is the AJ Steele Show. We will be right back with our interview with Ram, a Harley-riding American crusader leading the fight against radical Islam. All I really want to
be is the guy that gets the girl. The AJ Steele Show. Think of your loudmouth best friend, hated by all the wives, because he tells it just like it is. Finally see your love
belongs to me. Ram, welcome to the AJ Steele Show. I've been following your organization, American Bikers for National Security, for the past few years. And one of the things that strike me the most is your bravery in the face of constant abuse, lies, and just plain maliciousness from our media, our political class, and many people who seem to close their eyes to the ever-growing extremist Muslim threat to the survival of our country. Now, in the press photos, you look like a tough guy, a real tough Harley rider, the kind of guy who never backs down and never puts up with any crap. Tell me a little bit about your family history, where you came from, how you grew up in the U.S., and what inspires you.
Well, I'm Israeli born. I was born in Haifa, Israel, and I've immigrated legally. I want to note that back in 1971, I was 14 years old. I've come straight to New Jersey, and I made my life here as an American, as a proud patriotic American. From then on, I was pretty much living a normal life. I was not involved politically. I understood. I've listened. You know, I knew what was going on, but I wasn't involved. I was what you would call the quintessential couch potato. However, 9/11 changed my life. I happened to have been in Jersey City on my route. I drive a truck as well, and I was working up in North Jersey at the time, and the news came that a plane hit the tower, and I actually was able to see the fire and the smoke. So when I made my way towards Bayonne, which is on a Patterson Plank, I'm not sure many people would know that, but it has a great view of the city from that part. And although it was early in the morning, but because I start real early, I decided to park and watch the fire a little bit, like any normal person would do. And it wasn't long after that when I saw the second plane fly into the second building. I understood immediately what was happening. At that point, I've made a decision that I would no longer be apathetic, and I need to educate myself, and I need to learn a lot more so I can become a little more active. Another turn that came about, I listened to Melanie Phillips talk about the war of propaganda, the war of words, how Israel, although militarily superior to the Arabs in the Middle East, in the war of words, they basically mopped the floor with us. Another event that also affected me greatly is that in 1972, during the Munich Olympics, my first cousin, Tuvia Sikorsky, was the only one that was able to escape from the room of the athlete. All his friends and teammates were slaughtered. He was the one that was able to escape and jump out the window.
That's just incredible.
He was the weightlifting coach at the time. A few of his teammates were one who were killed that I knew as a child, since he was about 10 years older than me. They used to basically tease me and throw me around and so forth. So those events basically got my goat and drove me to do what I do today. At one point, we would go, we would do some rallies here and there. I would be on the internet reading posts from people who are educated and understood a lot about this stuff. So I educated myself that way, connecting with some smart people. And I've learned a lot of things that I didn't know before. You know, even though I'm from the Middle East, and even though I understood, you know, the Israelis and the Arabs, there was a lot of things that I did not understand, in particularly about Islam.
I want to look back to a little bit before. It sounds like you and your family are no strangers to horrible things. You told me previously, and I read in your biography, that you are a child of Holocaust survivors. I know it's a very touchy subject, but could you tell us a little bit about it and how it shaped your life?
Well, of course. I am a son of Holocaust survivors. My father ran with the partisans, which was the underground, and my mother is actually an Auschwitz survivor. Half my family were murdered by the Nazis. I only know one pair of my grandparents and a few uncles. The rest all perished, and particularly on my father's side. And growing up and hearing my mother telling me stories of how things were and what it meant to be a Jew, to understand who I am and what I am, that shaped a lot of things about the way I am today. I know where I belong. I know who I am. I know where I stand. And I live my life that way. I respect other people. I respect other faiths and so forth, but I would not back down from any threat because I understand that it's going to come. And that's the early part. And then growing up in Israel, you know, with the conflict over there, I was 10 years old during the Six-Day War. And I remember clearly what it was like living in Israel at the time. You know, all the men were gone. It was just old people and just women in the street when we had to paint our windows black, being concerned of air raids and so forth, spending time in shelters. So you've
seen some pain and you've felt some pain. Let me ask you something that is kind of coming up recently in America. It seems like so many candidates and pundits on the left are comparing anything they don't like to the Holocaust. If we keep illegals from entering our country, it's a concentration camp. Trump is Hitler. Anyone on the right they disagree with is a fascist or a Nazi. Being that you are a child of Holocaust survivors, what are your thoughts of this new nasty liberal trend?
Well, just to make a quick note, you know, although I'm a son of Holocaust survivors, I am a Nazi now just because I support the president.
I did not know that. Wow.
Yes. I actually, not only am being called a Nazi on social media, but because I'm very active out in the streets as well. Going back to inauguration night, when we went to celebrate Trump's election, we actually ended up in the middle of an Antifa riot the night before, Lisa and I, and we were standing there and we were surrounded by a bunch of Antifas with their face covered, calling me a Nazi and a fascist. And I told them, how dare you? I'm a son of Holocaust survivors. You guys are cowards. And I thought we were going to get whopped pretty good. Mm. But, you know, they didn't physically touch us for some reason or another, although we were so outnumbered. But I stood up to them and called them cowards. I told them they're covering their faces because they're cowards. Why don't they reveal who they are if they so strongly believe in what they're doing? And how dare they call me a Nazi? But getting back to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's remark and so forth, it seems to me that she's no different than a Holocaust denier, because marginalizing the Holocaust is a form of Holocaust denial. I think it's deliberate, and they're doing it on purpose. I believe she knows what she's doing, and I resent it deeply. How can you compare people who want to come into this country that by choice came to our border and are sitting there and wanting to enter the country to what my mother went through when she hid for as much as a couple of years at night in the winter in the woods just to avoid being caught, and sneaking at night behind people's houses in the garbage can so she can see what she can salvage to eat, potatoes, peels, or whatever else she could find, just so she can eat something. Just to eventually be caught and pointed out and taken into a concentration camp. Well, and that's in their own country, you know, where she was a citizen.
She didn't go there trying to sneak into another country. She lived in her own country.
She lived. That she was a citizen. That was her home. And eventually she was pointed out as a Jew and caught, and she was put on a train and taken to Auschwitz, where every morning she would line up. According to what she was telling me, they would line up every morning so they can divide them. If you look really sick and weak, you would be sent to the guest chambers. If you look healthy enough to work, you would be sent to work. So she would pinch her cheeks every morning so they would look red, so she would look healthy enough so she will not be sent to the guest chamber and be sent to work instead. And when I'm thinking of the stories my mother is telling me, and I'm listening to what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is saying, I'm totally disturbed by it. It's mind-boggling. It's very angering. You know, I'm dumbfounded.
The liberals, and especially the extreme liberals of today, the younger generation, they feel that there's a moral equivalency between everything. Everybody's equal. The murderer is equal to the murdered. The person that's trying to break into the country is equal to the person who's following the law. And I think that's the trend in America today.
Well, I believe there's good and there's evil. You know, I'm sorry. That's just reality. I mean, I would love to think that we were all equal and everything is wonderful and we're all good. I get that. I wish that as well. But reality is reality. And what I've learned in my life, where I've come from and what my parents had to deal with and what I see here, we know that that's not true. There are different cultures. There are different ways of thinking and believing. And I see there's good and there's evil. I tell people, what side are you on? I know what side I'm on, and I understand that. Again, I wish it wasn't like that, but that's just wishful thinking.
I agree, Ram. I think there is good and there is evil. And we have to fight evil. And if you don't fight evil, you're on the side of evil.
You're listening to the AJ Steele Show, where no topic is off limits, no discussion too harsh, no truth more true. The AJ Steele Show, we tell it like it is.
Change gears a little bit, and I want to talk a little bit about a group that you founded. It is called the American Bikers for National Security. I want to know about your famous motorcycle ride to the town of Islamberg. And believe it or not, I never knew there was a town in America called Islamberg. Who would have believed it?
Well, actually, I'll fill you in a little bit about it. They called MOAs, which are the Muslims of the Americas. Those are campgrounds that were established by a Pakistani imam named Sheikh Jilani. Sheikh Jilani, in case people didn't know about him, he's the one who founded the Al-Fuqra terror organization. And he's also the sheikh that Daniel Pearl, the reporter, the Jewish reporter, was on his way to interview when he was intercepted and beheaded. So he was here in the 1980s in Brooklyn in a mosque called the Al-Farouq Mosque on Atlantic Avenue. And when he was here back in the 80s, he established the first one, which is called Islamburg. It's up in Hancock, New York. It's a compound where most of the residents are converts out of prisons. They take over there, and basically, they are indoctrinated into Islam. They somewhat dormant, you know. They could be radicalized at any moment, at any time, when the time is right. They said so themselves. They have been active in some violence, firebombing and so forth, but it's mostly against some Hindus and other Muslims right at this point. Now they have as many as 35 across 22 states in the United States, and that includes some in Canada and the Caribbean as well. There was one in Colorado Springs that was raided by the Colorado authorities a few years back, where they basically found caches of weapons, anywhere from guns to explosive to bows and arrows. People can look it up if they like. Everything I'm saying, it's not something that I search or looked up myself. That's information from law enforcement and our government.
Wow, it really seems like it's either the feeble-minded or the violent-minded people that are attracted to Islam here in the United States.
Well, yeah, well, they offer them a place to go. Prisoners are very vulnerable to be recruited into Islam. You know, they offer protections in the prisons. And they're also people with violent backgrounds, which means that it's very useful to people like Sheikh Jilani. So, yeah.
It's almost like a gang mentality, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's a mob mentality. Absolutely, it is a gang. They do belong to a organization, you know, if that's what you want to call a gang, you know. Absolutely, I don't see much difference between that and some other gangs. There's no question about that. It's just that they seem to be a very organized and also family oriented as well, because they live there with their wives and they have children and so forth.
So how are these people financed? Does somebody pay for them to do this? How do they live?
Well, as far as I know, the sheikh owns all that property, and they get money from, I guess, to the Al-Fuqra, to Sheikh Jilani. That's who finances it all. Hmm. Some of them hold jobs, I guess, outside and so forth. I'm not sure exactly how the financing works. I never actually looked into that. They live very poorly. They live basically in little shacks or trailers. Hmm. It's not like they have fancy homes or lavish life. They live a very simple life there.
I wonder how much welfare abuse is being done by these people, because we all know of a lot of people that they work side jobs and this and that. And I wonder if we, the American taxpayers, are paying for these violent people.
You know, you bring up a good point. Again, this is something I didn't look into. You know, I was too busy with so many other things, but I wouldn't doubt it for a minute that there is a lot of welfare and government entitlement. That's one area I didn't search much into, but you bring up a good point, because obviously, since there are women and children there, I'm sure that there's a lot of entitlements involved as well. So perhaps that's another way where they being financed, because they are American citizens. There's no question about that. And again, when you're in Islam, there are children, many children involved, and so on and so forth. So I wouldn't doubt that for a minute. It's just that I cannot speak to it specifically.
So is Islam as a whole your enemy, or the enemy of America? Is every Muslim evil? Do you think there's a way to live peacefully with people who belong to this huge religion? There's that 1.5 billion of them on Earth.
The way I always say is those are 1.5 billion potential lone wolves. Now, not everyone is radicalized. Not everyone is the same. Many are non-followers. There are some reformers. But when you're talking about 1.7 billion people, And we're not just talking about those who are willing to commit violent acts. We're talking about the support system, people who identify with what they do. We're talking about hundreds of millions of people. So it's a real issue. Can you live with them? The question is, can they assimilate? Very few do. In France, for instance, after the colonization of North Africa, many of the Muslims that came over to Europe were fine. It seems like the second generation is actually been radicalized in mosques by radical imams. And they want to prove that they're good followers. And many of them will act up on it by murdering you or something of that nature. So it's very hard to know who you can trust, who you can't trust. Even the taqiyya, where they're allowed to deceive you to advance the cause of Islam. So now when you have someone who's sincere and really wants to be good with you, you're still apprehensive because you're not really sure. Is he serious? Is he not? Are his children going to be okay? It's a tribal mentality. It's a clash of civilization. And it's one thing when you trickle in a few at the time where they can come and assimilate and so forth. But when you overwhelm a place with so many so fast, it becomes very dangerous. We also see they live together. And once they live together, they're very inclusive. They seclude themselves, like in no-go zones in Europe, where they have their own neighborhood, and they dictate how things should be in that neighborhood, where even the police having a rough time to keep the country's law. They create their own laws within that community. And, you know, we had vaginal mutilation in Dearborn, Michigan.
Right here in our very country. Yes, they're doing clitorectomies, I think they're called.
And you have honor killings in all across the West, never mind what's going on in the Middle East itself and Africa. So they bring that culture and they hold on to it. And they seem like that's the way that they choose to live. And that does not go well for Western society. You know,
we have
a constitution. It does not agree at all, you know. So it's a very hard question. You want to say yes, you want to say they are decent people, which they are, and you want to say, yeah, we can get along, we can be okay, you know, on a one-to-one basis. You want to say that, but you always, you know, you want to have peace, but you always got to watch your back at the same time, because you don't know what's going to happen next. Better safe than sorry.
I think I like your attitude, and I agree with your attitude. You've been getting a lot of press, you know, your group, your motorcycle group, American Bikers for National Security. And some of the press has been great, but in many cases, they call you paranoid. They call you far right, anti-Muslim, extremist. You have even drawn the ire of the notoriously biased Southern Law Poverty Center. What would you say to people who call you a Nazi, a racist, an Islamophobe?
Well, all I say is I'm a patriotic American that cares about his country, the future of America, the Constitution, the future of my children. That's what motivates me more than anything else. And I do believe I'm on the side of good, not evil. And I know that I will be marginalized because that's what evil does. They will marginalize. They don't care what your motives are. I'm not out there to kill or hurt anybody. I'm just trying to raise awareness and educate people as to what we're dealing with. So hopefully they would make the right choice the next time they vote. And so that's really my motive more than anything else. You know, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm not looking to harm anyone or infringe on anyone's constitutional rights. So the fact that the Southern Poverty Law Center lists me on their hate list, you know, maybe it's a badge of honor, I guess. That's the way I see it. I really don't pay much mind to them. They are being sued left and right by many people like myself and very successfully. But again, they got so much money coming from many places and they can afford a lot of those things. Actually, when we do our ride, by the way, getting back to Islamabad, once a year we go up there and we do a little ride by. Constant contact with the state police. They know everything that we're doing, when we're doing, where we're going. I have good relationship with two detectives who are assigned to what we do. And they know when we come, they block the road for us. They make sure everybody is safe and secure. On both sides, we always let our riders know that we expect them to just follow the rules. We expect them to just ride by from one point to another. We do not enter the compound. We stay on state road, which is our First Amendment right, and the police understands that. And once we complete our ride, we get together somewhere away from the camp, and we have a nice little bash and good old American patriotic fun with each other, where we cook and make some speeches and play game and just enjoy each other's company. So it's really that simple. But at the same time, you know, what we're trying to do here is that growing up in the U.S., many times I hear many Americans say, well, you know, it's going on over there, all the way over there. Why is it my business? I'm going to worry about it. If they come in my backyard, then I'm going to let them know where it's at. The message with the MOA campground is not, is they are training in your backyard. It's an easy message to convey to people. If you're apathetic or if you don't know much about Islam, that might trigger your interest a little bit to become more involved. And that's the whole purpose of those rides that we do once a year. Obviously, there are bigger dangers than that and that are much more complicated, that it's very hard to drop that on someone who is apathetic or not involved. But by showing them this carrot and getting them interested, perhaps now they will be willing to be more educated about what the real imminent threat is from Islam in our country today. That's also a reason why we use bikes. We use bikes for a couple of reasons. People like a lot of bikes. They want to know what's going on. They want to, you know, they pay attention. If they see a video with a bunch of bikers, they will watch it. And that's a good way for us to open the door to a conversation and so forth. What it also accomplished, you know, when it comes to Islam, it speaks their language. Islam understands strength. If they see you weak, they will capitalize on it. If they see you strong, they would respect you and be a little more cautious. And being on bikes, it exudes strength and patriotism. And so for those reasons, we use bikes and hope to be effective in raising awareness, educating, and sending a message that we know what's going on. We're not sleeping. We're not stupid.
AJ Steele, not right, not left, just right.
I think you're raising a lot of awareness with your rides, and I think a lot of people appreciate what you do and they emulate what you do. We have a president here in America, President Trump, who seems to be very aware of the Islamic threat to the world and to the U.S. in particular. What is your opinion of President Trump and his so-called Muslim ban? And even more important, what about his policy of isolating Iran, which runs completely contrary to everything that Hussein Obama, and his band of Israel haters have worked for?
Ooh, okay, that's a lot of areas. first thing, there is no Muslim ban. There never really was one. It's a ban on certain Muslim country that had no government, and there was no way to vet people that were coming over from that country to find out who they are and what are they about, as we do with every other country on earth. Once you have an established government and we can vet the people who are coming over from there, then it's not an issue. So a Muslim ban is a false premise. It's not true. But then again, as far as the media and the left is concerned, they'll still drive it as much as they can. I feel he understands what's going on because of a recent statement that he had made where he mentioned that he may designate the Muslim Brotherhood as an international terror organization. That is very important. That's where the real imminent danger from Islam in our country comes from, because Muslim Brotherhood is basically Hamas, Al-Qaeda, and many 501c3 organizations here in the United States, such as CARE and ISNA and the Muslim Student Association, the Student for Justice for Palestine. That's where you see a lot of that stuff going on in our universities and everywhere else. The Muslim Brotherhood have an agenda. There was actually a document discovered on a terror raid in Virginia back in the late 90s. It was called the Explanatory Memorandum, which is the Muslim Brotherhood strategic plan for North America, where in 17 or 18 pages in Arabic, it basically details step by step what their intentions are. It's been since translated into English, and it was actually introduced in court of law in the biggest anti-terror trial in U.S. history, U.S. versus the Holy Land Foundation, which Obama put a stop to when he got into office. Now, that what that document basically in short entails is how they intend to take America within. And that is through infiltration, where they can drive their agenda and dictate the narratives. They look to infiltrate every single organization in America. So they are in our public school, in textbook writing, in law enforcement, in our universities, in our government, you name it, that's where they are. Care is everywhere. And the FBI cannot be proactive with them because, again, those are terrorists with suits and ties that use our constitutions and our laws to make their way in order to achieve their agenda. But if the Muslim Brotherhood ever declared as an international terror organization, then they can follow the money. And that's what can shut down organizations such as CARE, Student for Justice for Palestine, and many other sub-terror organizations that are operating in our country in what we call stealth jihad. If I had to use an analogy, it would be like an iceberg. You see the tip over the water, but the mess is all under the water. And that's the stealth jihad. That's the Muslim Brotherhood here in America. And that's the biggest danger that we face from Islam.
I think what you're saying is fascinating, and I'm learning so much. And I hope all of our listeners here at the AJ Steele Show, they learn and they appreciate your knowledge. I myself went to college here in San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm very familiar with many of those groups because they were constantly protesting, constantly attacking anybody who was of the right wing, a conservative, a Jewish, etc., and with seeming impunity. But I have a follow-up question to you, and it's kind of a tough one, and it's probably going to be difficult for you to answer because you are Jewish, and obviously you're very well-read and you're very politically astute. But how do you feel about the fact that over 70% of American Jews consistently vote for the Liberal Democratic Party, the same party that vilifies Israel while seemingly leaning more and more towards an embrace of Islam, Iran, and the Palestinians? What do you call this? Is it self-hatred? Is it an inferiority mentality? Is it stupidity or just duplicity? What do you think about these American Jews, especially the liberal American Jews?
It's internal hatred. It's very hard to explain. A lot of it is tradition. Jews are known to be like for the underdogs, for, you know, to help people out. That's why they were so involved with the civil rights movement and so forth, because it's a natural gravity for Jews to want to do. The problem is that the Democratic Party is no longer your father's Democratic Party. It's not John F. Kennedy's Democratic Party anymore. It's been infiltrated, frankly, by communists and now jihadists as well. It has changed and moved very far to the left. They are basically moved away from defending Israel and become very much Jew-hating, if I may say so. Myself, I feel that the Democratic Party Jew hatred problem, it will be Obama's legacy. Not that it hasn't been going on for a long time, but it's getting to a point where it's full-blown now. And so many of the Jews, they're already invested in them for years, been part of it for years. And to say now that I'm moving away, some do, but many having a hard time to do that and still convince themselves that, no, it's not that. It's okay. It's going to be good. And it's the right that's the one that we need to watch out and be afraid of. Also, the mentality of wanting to be accepted. A lot of Jews, you know, they'll do anything just to be accepted, to be liked. I get that. But me personally, I like to be respected. You can like me or not like me, but you're going to respect me. That's the way I see it, you know, and I wish they felt the same way.
Ram, I think that's the Israeli Jew in you. And I think Israelis, from my experience, are very, very different kind of people than American Jews. And I know in your corner of the world, we have a Senator Nadler there and we have Chuck Schumer. And they just seem to be very, very quiet about all this anti-Semitism coming out of the Democrat Party. What is going to happen? Are they going to leave or are they just going to lay down and take it?
They're going to lay down and take it. And I got to tell you, up till now, the group of Jews that I've hated the most because of my mother's past from Europe were Kapo Jews, those who collaborated with the Germans and were actually guards in concentration camps so they can have a better life. But my view has changed now somewhat. Although I still have dislike for them, I do understand they did not have a choice. But what is Schumer's and Nadler's excuse? They have a choice. So I see them as much worse at this point because they do have a choice. And that really angers me. That makes me very upset. I have no use for these people at all.
I think they're politicians first and Americans second and maybe Jews third, and that's the problem. But let me talk about the liberal PR machine in our country that is so powerful and so loud. Some might question that you, a former Israeli, might have dual loyalty to your birth country and not to your adopted country, or not as much. How do you answer a question of this duality? How do you feel about America, Ram?
It's nonsense. Not in my case in particularly, but I'm sure in many other people who think like me. When I came to this country, I didn't come to this country to change people to the way I am. I came here to be an American. Actually, even at the age of 13 and a half, 14, when I found out I was coming to America, I viewed America as such a great, wonderful place, the beacon of freedom. You know, I understood what it meant. I know if there was no America, there'll be no freedom around the globe, period. And I was excited about that to the point where I actually teased my friend like, na, 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 I'm going to be an American, na, 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 na. And I came here with that attitude. I've come here. I went to school here. I made friends here. I've married here. I had my children here. And I'm a very strong American patriot. This is my country now. The fact that I support and love Israel and concern from Israel, that's okay because they are compared. They are, you know, the same type of society we have here in America. Those are freedom-loving people that are defending their own lives themselves against tyranny and oppression. So supporting Israel is fine. Not, you don't have to be an Israeli or a Jew that you should feel the way I feel about Israel. But I am here and I fight for this country. And that's the country I want to be in. I'm not going anywhere.
Well, I think you're a very patriotic man, and I appreciate that. And my listeners are going to appreciate that. On a personal level, I have a quick question. And you don't sound like a real or like a deeply religious man. Are you? Are you a religious man?
I'm not an observant Jew. Okay. But I am a man of faith. I like to believe that there is a God, and I know where I belong. Although I'm not an observant Jew, I respect the observant Jews because that's the glue that kept the Jewish nation together. I will argue fiercely that if it wasn't for them, I probably would not know that I'm a Jew today. Also, I have ancestry. My grandparents, their parents, they were following Orthodox Jews. I wish I could be more like that. It's a way of life, but I guess I'm a little weak when it comes to that. But if I ever did become more observant, that's the way I would follow. I don't believe in the conservatism or the reform movement. I think that's just a perversion and a deviation for what Judaism really is.
People say that God works in mysterious ways. Maybe in some way you're doing God's work by fighting radical Islam and protecting not only the state of Israel, but your home of America.
Okay, I'll accept that, you know. I'll accept that, you know. I like to be humble to some point as well, you know, because the humility, I think, is very, very important. That's what I learned from my faith, from my people. And I like to keep it that way. I feel I'm just a small part of it. I just wish many more people did what I'm doing. And this is really why I'm doing what I'm doing, is trying to get more people to do what I'm doing. I think it's very important. I think people should know and understand. That's how we're going to keep America free and keep the Constitution alive. The Constitution says, you know, all men are created equal. I very much believe in that. And I think it's important to sustain it, because if America is ever gone, God forbid, to all the free people around the world.
We only have a few more questions left. The time has just flown by, and you're a great guest, and we appreciate you coming on the show. The world is full of cowards and naysayers. Some people call you names. Other people say that your work doesn't amount to anything. How do you feel you and the rest of American Bikers for National Security make a difference for America and the free world? And what future goals do you have?
I think it does make a difference because I've been doing it for a while now. And I remember early on, there was very little interest in what we do and in the subject itself. But I've seen it grow in leaps and bounds. It grew with our ride. Where in the first time, we had just a few riders, as for the last time, we had many. And I see it on social networks as well. Groups who support Israel were very small. If they reached a couple of 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 likes, they were considered big groups. But now you can easily reach a few million with some of these groups. So I think it's showing that a lot more people are taking interest and becoming less apathetic to the problem. And it's not just Islam, it's the left as well. It's this unholy alliance that they have created with each other because I guess the enemy of your enemy is my friend. That's how they look at it, you know, and obviously mm-hmm. they will turn on each other eventually. Mm-hmm. But for now, that's how they operate. And I think that the support base for this belief, for this movement has grown. Actually, when Trump said we got a movement going, he did not create this movement. That movement was brewing well before Trump has come. But when he came, he spoke our language and we heard it and we understood it and we got behind him because this is what we were waiting for. He's like the person. I don't believe that good leaders just come along. I believe desperate times bring good leaders. And I believe we're getting to that point where someone like Trump and the same way George Washington came along at his time. I believe that it does matter. It does makes a difference. And like I said before, I wish many more people will do the same. It's one thing to understand and vote right, but it's another thing to actually become active because I'm active from the moment I get up till the moment I go to bed. When I go to work, I see young people every day. I speak to them. I show them. I wear paraphernalia so they will ask me questions so I can talk to them about it. It never stops with me. You know, I constantly feel I need to let people know, you know, sound the alarm. And I do it all the time. So I feel that, yes, I think it makes a difference. I think it is advancing. And I think it's only going to grow from this point on. At least that's what I hope for. If it doesn't, God help us all.
Ram, from your mouth to God's ears, as they say, do you have any final statements for the AJ Steele Show audience?
Well, the only thing that I can say is don't just sit back. Don't be quiet. Become active. We need every single one of us to spread the word, to defend freedom. Freedom isn't free. I know it's a cliche, but it's really true. And we need to be able to talk to as many people as we can, educate ourselves as much as we can, and continue to do so. And this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm trying to get more people to do what they're doing, and I urge everyone to do the same. Even if you can find a friend that does not vote or not registered, and you can register him and pick him up for lunch on election day, have lunch with him and then go to the poll with him and vote with him. If each one of us did that, we're doubling our votes. This is where the key is. Our politicians can change things. And obviously, they are corrupt on both sides. I'm not just talking. There are many. The Republican Party has been infiltrated as well. So we need to get the right people that would do the right job. Because keep in mind, Islam, like you mentioned before, we're talking about 1.6 billion people. There are estimates that the demography is going to change dramatically over the next 10, 20, 30 years. It's going to be a whole other ballgame. The estimates in 30 years, there could be as many as 30 to 40 million Muslims in America. You know, we already see some of it with Talib and Rashid and many other that are running for offices across the country. There's actually a candidate for governor of Michigan that's a Muslim. And whether the politician themselves are Muslim or not will be irrelevant when you're going to have such a large voting bloc from Islam. They will be eating out of their hands and do their will because they will stick together. That's our problem. We are too fragmented. We're not organized the way the opposition is, and we should not underestimate them. We need to collectively get together. We need to organize. We need to network. And more than anything, we need to become active. So that is my message.
Ram, it's been a great pleasure to speak to someone who puts his money where his mouth is. It's very easy to hide behind a computer and to be a pretend tough guy. But there's very few brave people who actually stand up and count. You're one of them. And in my opinion, you're a modern-day Maccabee for Israel and a Paul Revere for America. I wish you all the best, and I hope that you know that many, many Americans like me and many others who belong to this silent majority admire and appreciate what you do for our country. Thank you very much, Ram Lobernicki.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much, AJ, for what you're doing as well. I appreciate this, and keep up the good work.
All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl. All I really want to be. All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl.
The AJ Steele Show. Copyrighted 2019.